Welcome to the Picture House podcast. Have to say congratulations on the truly joyous, unbearable weight of massive talent.
What's the worry here, Nick? You've lost some of your talent as an actor?
No. What did he say?
He says he loves you, but he went in a different direction.
I'm done. I'm quitting acting. Tell the trades it was a tremendous honor to be a part of storytelling and mythmaking.
Man, I'm driving through the hills. I'm sorry. One more time.
I loved every second of it. And I just loved as well, like, just the whole way through, I was just thinking the audaciousness of it as well. Like, the whole premise resting on the fact that you had to have Nicolas Cage playing Nicolas Cage. Mm-hmm. You would have been 100% invested in your script. Tell me, what were you going to do if you said no? Which you did.
Yeah. I'm not really sure. I know that when Kevin and I had started writing it, we'd be walking around all day thinking about it through our sort of plotted ideas. And we would sort of look at each other and we were having so much fun writing it and crafting this very strange narrative. And we just think, is there any chance that he's ever going to do this? And we thought, well, what do we do? So we sort of discussed other actors at the time. And we were like, there isn't anybody else that has like a groundswell beneath him where like people want Nicolas Cage to sort of succeed. They want him to come back. They want him to be okay. The sight of his face makes them happy. And we were like, we have to get him. But it was, I mean, we had spent 6, 7, 8 months writing this thing and doing nothing else. We didn't take any other jobs. And, you know, a former producing partner of mine called me and he said, man, like as a pure business decision, this is one of the dumbest things I've seen anyone do ever. There is one person who can do your movie. And we were like, ah, God, the whole thing felt like a gamble the whole way through. But that was sort of what made us excited about it.
Oh, fantastic. I love it. You know, and he did turn it down 4 times. I mean, that in and of itself is a movie, isn't it? And then finally saying yes. How was that? How did you get that?
I'm telling you, it was a roller coaster. I don't know if I've told people this, but we had given it to like a studio and they had called and we went in to meet them and they said, we love this script and we want to make this, movie. We'll give you the money. We'll buy the script. And we were like, that never happens, right? It's never that easy. And we were like, this feels good. Okay. Like we thought it was a good product. We thought it was a cool script. We get home and we get a call. He's definitely not doing the project. And it was just this roller. We were trying to celebrate. And then we like, you know, you're like pouring the drink back in the bottle or something, you know, just like, oh, I'm trying to put the cork back in. It was just the whole way through was a roller coaster. And then, you know, he comes onto the project after we wrote him this long letter detailing our intentions. And then, you know, we get down to prep the movie and then there's COVID. It was just like the whole thing had so many ups and downs. It felt very appropriate for this type of project.
Absolutely. And I guess when he did finally come on, it must have been a bit like, yeah, okay.
No, we were like, really? Why? I mean, we're happy. Yeah. No, you're actually going to do this? That's crazy. Yeah,
I know.
We're shocked and, you know. Once he understood that our intention was to make something that was sort of a celebration of like his entire like body of work, rather than, you know, there's sort of satirical versions of this or the versions that, you know, are sort of making fun of Nick. And I think that was his big fear. And we didn't know each other. So we had to meet and he had to find out that we had his best intentions in mind.
Yeah, and it's a really clever, funny film. I mean, regardless of him, it being about him and him playing it, you know, it stretches him. I mean, it's an extraordinary piece of acting that he has to come up with. I mean, just when he said he was terrified of doing that opening screen scene when he reads for the director, I'm not surprised that he was terrified. I mean, that was genius. Tell me about directing that bit.
Well, that bit, you know, it's funny because I, you know, part of the letter we said to Nick, we said, you've done every genre almost equally well. And there's very few actors who have done that. And you think about like the differences between Moonstruck and Raising Arizona and Con Air and Face Off and, you know, Adaptation and Mandy. I mean, they're just, and I said, this project is an opportunity to do almost all of those genres in one film. And if we get it right, how cool would that be? You know, and the if, I think there kind of turned Nick on where he said, okay, like I could help pull this off. But, you know, the first act of the film from that first scene where he's auditioning for David all the way through to where he quits acting, you know, I think it was kind of there was a lot of personal stuff in there that was real that intersected with the Nicolas Cage character that we had created. So that was just kind of, I think that was the section of the movie that really, that scared him the most. And that particular scene, you know, David and him had made Joe together, which is a beautiful movie, I think. And so they were good friends and they had a lot of fun with it. And they had a familiarity so Nick could, you know, get into that character. And, you know, but the vulnerability and the desperation, he would go, but I'm not in that place right now. I'd say, but I know, but we got to think about, like, you know, a moment where you felt this way. And so he had to channel that thing, but it really comes across. He and shows the versatility of Nick as an actor. And that was something I found really special.
I completely agree. There was that scene and the scene on the cliff. They just were so stomach churningly, like almost like watching a thriller in comedy. But like, if you get that slightly wrong, it's not going to work. And I thought the cliff bit was the other sort of pivotal moment of him, showing us what he can be and what he can do. Do you agree? Do you think that cliff moment was along the same lines?
I agree. You know, and there's some of the scenes that seem simple, and it's funny that you point that one out. You know, there's actually like a lot going on for Nick. He's playing multiple things in those scenes, and he's got to at once be sort of scared that this potentially crazy person is, you know, having him run through the woods, then figuring out that it's an acting exercise, and then having to, you know, to be frustrated with this person, but also he's kind of a narcissist and loving the attention. So he has to play all of those things. And, you know, for me, that was, that is like a really important moment because he decides to show you sort of the power of Nicolas Cage's acting. And it's done in a meta way because that's a line from Con Air. You're in an untenable situation. You know that, right? When he turns around and you go, oh, right. He's playing a character who's very vulnerable and at a low point, but then he can turn it on in a second. And so that was just really fun for us to see because we thought it could happen. But you know, when you see him do it, it's just, it became so fun and so oddly real.
For me, I almost stood up and applauded. I was like, oh, that's genius, as well as laughing, you know, because it's so, so funny all the way through. I also just found that your supporting cast, like Pascal, was just perfectly cast. Tell me about finding him and who did you have in mind that could play next to him?
You know, we were thinking about that character and there's like an inherent sweetness to that character, but he needed to have the ability to go very dark and very scary at times. Otherwise, the balance of the narrative would fall apart. So, you know, when we met Pedro, I had only seen him kind of Game of Thrones and Narcos, and he always plays these macho, like kind of very hard characters. And we went in to have lunch, Kevin Etten and I went in to have lunch with Pedro. And he just sat down and was like, I don't even care if you guys put me in this movie. I just wanted to, I love Nicolas Cage and I just wanted to talk to you about the script. And he becomes this very incredibly sweet, soft guy who was, you know, and we thought, oh, there's a lot of Javi in Pedro. And we started to sort of craft the character around the idea of him playing a character we haven't seen him play before. And so there was just a sweetness and a super fandom that came out. And we thought, okay, he is the guy. And he was our proxy because we're just like Nick Cage fans. So we just put him in front to, you know, have the collection of memorabilia and tell Nick that he's fantastic.
Yes, absolutely. And that room, I mean, tell me about putting the room together. Like, how did you find all the stuff? I mean, was the wax work real?
That was, that's by far the most expensive set in the entire film because we had to license all of that stuff. And, you know, that the wax sculpture of Nick and Face Off we had made, but we had it shipped over, you know, and it had kind of melted, and it was truly, truly insane looking. And I thought, I can't show this to Nick. It's so deeply offensive. So I called Bill Corso. He's like an incredible, incredible makeup artist, the head of our department. And, you know, it's what Oscar winning guy. He's like, and I went over to Bill and I said, you have to help me make this look more like Nicolas Cage. I don't know what you can do to it. And he was like, give me 20 minutes. Let me see what I can do. And it still looks pretty crazy, but at least, you know, and then we built that in. So we had to tweak Nick's lines a little bit. So he's going, this thing is grotesque. And it was, I was like, ugh, you should have seen it 20 minutes ago. You would have left that.
It's perfect. Because waxworks are generally horror, you know, horrific.
So. Yeah. But we did think it was a funny idea for him to think it's horrific and try to buy it. You know, just but it was always a balance for that character of like the narcissism versus like the vulnerability. And Nick would sort of oscillate between those two things, and getting that balance right was tricky.
And especially when he's playing opposite himself. I mean, again, that was just so perfectly balanced, because any kind of off kilter would have just thrown it. And I mean, how was that? Who was playing him when he was playing himself, if you know what I mean? Did you have someone in there with him?
Yeah, we did. It was a series of doubles that we used. And then, you know, just the standard sort of trickery. Sometimes there'd be a tennis ball there, sometimes there'd be another actor. But, you know, we basically shot the A side of that with Nick, because he had a beard, and then we shaved the beard. And then about a week later, I shot the other side with Nicky, and he would have the performance of Nick in his ear and an earwig. And so we could hear himself acting. And then basically when, you know, we'd shoot over the shoulder and shoot the doubles and or do split screens. And then, you know, and then we had to de-age Nicky to get him to that, you know, the Wogan Show, Wild at Heart era Nicolas Cage. It was very fun. And I think Nick really latched on to that character, the young version of himself.
Yes.
Because he said, I look back and I find this guy just so obnoxious. And he's like, I would love the opportunity to make him the villain in the film.
Definitely, but so earnest as well, you know. I love that.
Right, very, very earnest, and they get a chance to kiss each other, which is great for us.
I mean, all of it.
By the way, that was Nick's idea. Nick came to us because he would always come in the morning with all of these ideas. You know, 118 movies in, he would come in and say, I'm just so excited. I've got something to show you. Okay, can we start on me? He always wanted to start on him, of course. You know, like. And he would go, oh, so I've got this idea. I know he's supposed to kiss Nicky on the cheek, but I thought like I should deeply French kiss myself. And we thought, and Kevin and I, yeah, we did what you just did. We almost spit out like our coffee. We were like, that, yes, you should absolutely do that. That's not something we would ever thought of or had the balls to ask you to do. But luckily you're pitching it. So we were like, yes, perfect. Very funny.
It is very fun. And it's fabulously unexpected. I mean, just the most jaw-dropping point in the whole film.
It's what you get. It's kind of the reason why, because of things like that, moments like that, that's the reason why we made the film, you know?
Yeah, completely.
That's the reason why he is who he is. And a lot of those are his ideas.
Yeah, and the fact that he called you the mind, I mean, what an honor to have been given a nickname by Nick Cage. And I could see his character coming up with that as well, even though it was him in real life that came up with that for you.
Yes,
it's the mind.
It all starts to collapse in on itself. He did. And he would say, because Nick, I say this, and he's like, you can't overthink it. He's always overthinking things. So am I. So we would call each other at night and be like, I have this idea and I have this thing. And Kevin and I would be working on a scene and we'd say, we have this thing that we're working on. And he would go, oh, more dialogue, you know? And then he would be like, so whenever he would see me coming into the set, he would go, oh God, here comes the mind. It's more dialogue. Here it is. It's going to come. What is it? And so it was sort of tongue in cheek, but it became a joke, or it was very funny. And to me anyways, and it, you know, he understood that like we were just always trying to make it better. And at the same time, so was he. So we were constantly tweaking and changing and dialing in the character. Cause it, you know, the whole film is kind of a tightrope walk. You know, you're like, it could fall apart if you just kind of lose focus on the tone.
Completely. And your women, I I love that you've got some really intelligent comedic giantesses, you know, like Sharon Horgan and Tiffany Haddish. So tell me about casting them.
Yes, well, Sharon, Kevin and I were in love with Sharon. We loved Catastrophe. We think she's an incredible writer and performer. And we were just so happy she liked the script and wanted to do the film. We were like, oh God, we're huge fans. Like, do you have any thoughts on the script? Do you have any notes? Do you have any ideas? And to get her for us, it was at once like her performances are always sort of super grounded and real. But she has the effect of making you like the Nicolas Cage character more because he was once married to her. And you're like, ah, okay. He married this like incredibly smart, totally sane woman who like keeps him in line. And it just makes you sort of understand like who he could be, I think. And yes, it had the effect of making you want him to get back there, back to some sort of equilibrium with her where they could have a nice relationship. That was pretty important.
That totally makes sense. And Tiffany Haddish, she just brought such a kind of grace and elegance, I thought, to the comedy angle of it, and you know, like a real strength.
Yeah, Tiffany's cool because she always plays these like kind of unhinged, like irresponsible characters. So it was kind of a risk for us to cast her in a role where she's in the CIA, and we're like, oh, she has to be totally in charge of this thing. So it was this fine line where she had to bring a sense of some reality to it, or that plot would fall apart, but it also had to be comic. And so it was that was for me like a truly kind of difficult part of the film to get right. And then we put Ike Barinholtz in with her, and the two of them had worked together before, and there's some fluidity, and they like, but she brought a kind of like, you know, subtle power to the role, like subtler than she's played before. And I thought that was kind of cool.
I completely agree. And then finally, I just can't help thinking that this is the perfect moment for a film like this. You know, sometimes Hollywood can be very serious about itself and, you know, with the whole Oscars and things like that. And it really needs to laugh at itself and really sort of refocus on what's important. Tell me about your sort of iconoclastic message that you're that the film comes across or gives over. Or well, if there you know, is I mean, one.
Look, there's a lot of risk involved in all these projects, and there's so much pressure on all of us to get it right that sometimes it has the effect of taking the fun away. You know, I think that the danger is it makes you take yourself seriously when things are going well or not well. And you know, for me, and I think for Nick, it's about taking the work seriously and being able to laugh at the rest of it, because it's all sort of absurd. You're all just out there trying to entertain a bunch of other people for a specific amount of time. And it's not that serious, you know, it isn't. And this movie sort of pokes a little bit of fun at that idea that Hollywood is so up its own ass in a lot of ways.
and it just needs to be gently reminded, you know, every now and then, I think, in a film like this does that just so beautifully. Tom, thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been such fun, a really generous interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.